to get started?
Yeah, let's start. Hi everyone, this is Enrico together with Moritz, Data Stories as usual. Hi Moritz, how are you?
Hi, doing great.
We have a special episode today. We are going to talk about color, and in order to talk about color, we invited a special guest. We have Gregor Aisch together with us today. Hi Gregor, how are you?
Hi, I'm fine. How are you?
Good, good, good. As long as we have good weather, everything is fine for me. So let me spend a few words about Gregor in case you don't know his name already, which would be strange if you are in the data visualization world. I think Gregor, from my point of view, is one of the rising stars of data visualization in the visualization galaxy right now. And he has a very nice website that is called Driven by Data, and he has very neat and clean and nice projects over there. So if you don't know it, go there, drivenbydata.net. And I think the specific reason why I invited him to talk about color is because he has this very nice little library called chroma.js, where he finally, I think, debunked several problems regarding to having proper colors, selecting proper colors in an easy way. But Gregor, do you want to introduce yourself and say something about you, who you are, how you started with visualization before we dive into color?
Yeah. First of all, thank you for the very nice introduction. It's hard to add any good points to that. How I started with visualization is I studied a strange course called computational visualistics, where we learned all the hard basics in data visualization and many more. And and then I jumped to the freelancing field. So, that's basically it.
Okay. So is this computational visualistics some sort of more of a computer science kind of background or a design background or just a mix of two of the two?
I would say it's like 60% computer science, and there's more or less 10 to 20% design. And the rest is what we call visualistics, which is kind of analogy to linguistic, which is well known. Uh-huh. And visualistics is kind of the analogy for everything related to understanding and creating images. So there I had like 2 years in psychology and but also other topics related to how we understand mm-hmm. images in our brains.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fine, really interesting. Okay, so we want to talk about color today because color is at the same time so powerful, potentially powerful for visualization, but also dangerous. We see many examples of visualizations where color is misused. And I don't know what is happening to Moritz.
Yeah. Family is rioting.
Okay. Yeah, it's fine.
That's quite usual.
Yeah. I like it. Yeah.
But I'm back. Sorry.
So let me start over again. So we want to discuss color because, as I was saying, color is at the same time very, very powerful, potentially powerful, but very dangerous at the same time. And I think, especially at the beginning for novices, there are lots of misunderstandings and it's very easy to misuse color. So we will try to go through how to use color and what are the major issues there and some common problems that we always find when designing visualizations with color. So, I don't know, Gregor, do you want to introduce something about color, how we perceive color, color scales, or whatever you want to say to introduce color in general?
Yeah, sure. I think the key point in understanding how we perceive color is to learn about the visual perception of humans in general, but to be more precise, you can learn quite a lot just from understanding the structure of the human retina. So the part of our eyes that is responsible for our vision. And within the human retina, we have quite a lot of receptor cells who are kind of, each of them responds to a certain feature. And mainly we have two types of them. Not sure if I tell you any new, but it's we have cones and we have rods, and the cones are for colors and rods are for light reception. And that's the first interesting point about the distribution of cones and rods, is that we have like 7 million cones, but we have 70 to 150 million of rods. So that's one point why we are much better suited to see differences in light than we are in perceiving differences in color. So in color, when I talk about color, I mainly mean the hue of the color.
Sure.
And you can even go deeper into the topic, and you see that we have three types of cones, which is very interesting, because it's very similar to the way we decode color is very similar to the way we encode it on our computer screens. So on computer screens, we have like three color channels for red, green, and blue. And the same we have in our cones. So we have basically three types of cones, and each of them is responsible for a certain color. One is very reddish and bluish and a green. And there's last interesting point about the distribution of the three types of cones is that they are not equally distributed. We have 10 times as much cones for red than we have for green and blue.
Yeah.
So this is the reason why it's very easy for us to distinguish between different shades of red than it is to distinguish between like green and blue, which is very close to us.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Yeah. One thing I learned in my cognitive science days is also that, I mean, you tend to believe your eye is like a camera, and then in the brain, you know, this camera picture is being sort of analyzed. But actually, the brain starts right on the retina, and information processing also starts right on the retina. So there's a lot of change in sensitivities going on depending on how light or dark it is at the moment. The contrast of your edges in the image are already enhanced. And overall, there's a lot of pre-computation already happening before anything enters the brain. So there's a lot of information transformation going on in your eye already.
Sure. I guess you read Colin Ware's book, right?
Yeah, sure.
I think there is an implication for that, right? I mean, the way we perceive color is connected to the way we specify color in our computers, right? And there are so many different colors, so many different ways to specify color in a computer. So, Gregor, you just said that the way we perceive, at least the receptors we have, are correspond more or less to this RGB model, but RGB is not exactly the best way to represent colors in visualization, right?
Yeah, but it's not 100% true, because we have a separate channel for light.
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Sure.
So that's not, we don't have it in RGB, but
I mean, this is at the level of the receptors.
RGB is overlap, right? So the receptor, you know, there are these curves where the receptors react, and these overlap, so we don't have these strictly separated channels.
Sure. That's right.
Some colors might trigger two types of receptors and so on. Yeah,
maybe we should clarify that. I mean, we have three receptors for different colors, but the way these receptors are tied together in order to create a signal is different, right?
Yeah, it's not strictly like
RGB. It's not strictly like going directly into these three channels.
Yeah.
Right.
So I think this is the reason why. So one thing is how our receptors process color, and one thing is how we perceive color, right? And how this impacts the way we use different color scales. I think that's also one of the reasons why we have so many different color scales. Gregor, can you tell us something about why we have so many different color scales, and what's their major differences? I mean, what's the main difference between, I don't know, RGB and, I don't know, hue, saturation and value and so on?
Okay. why we have so many different color spaces. I'm not even sure how to name them. Some say color space and some say color model, but it's very, very similar. Why we have so much of them? So that's an interesting question. I'm not sure. but I know most of them, and
you can answer it. I don't know. It's fine.
Yeah.
No, go ahead. Sorry.
So I think the main reason for RGB is a very technical reason, because this is the way we encode colors on computer screens. But it's not the ideal color space for design tasks, for instance. If you're in a graphic software, then you need a separate channels for hues, saturation, and the lightness of the color. But there are many color spaces that have this hue and saturation thing. But the third is very varies from different. So we have HSV, which is hue, saturation, and value, and we have HSB, which is sometimes referred to as HSL, because some say lightness and some say brightness, and there's you can read a long article on that on Wikipedia if you're interested. But the thing I learned is they're basically the same, and but the way they encode lightness is still very technically driven, because it's directly connected to the lighting of our screen, but not to the way we perceive the lightness of the color. So this is the reason why people introduced a completely different set of color spaces, which are more related to humans, and the most famous one is the LAB color space. But it's very this is the point where it gets tricky. You can in LAB you have one channel for lightness, and you have two color channels, but they are bipolar. So you have one ranging from green to pink, and the other ranging, I think, from blue to yellow, but don't quote me on that. So it's very difficult to use them in day-to-day work.
I found that too. Yeah. You have to think a lot to use them.
Yeah. But very recently I discovered a third, another color space, which is called, I think, the Munzel. Color space, and this is why the main reason for me to develop yet another library for color manipulation with Chroma.js, because I think it's still the only one who includes this Munzel color system, and the idea of the Munzel color system is that it takes the advantages of the LAB. Which is that lightness is measured in a way, in the same way we perceive lightness, but you have the convenience of a hue channel, so one single hue channel and a kind of saturation channel, which I called a chroma channel now.
Okay. Yeah. So is it correct to say that in the end we can distinguish between two broad classes of color spaces, those that are more targeted towards measuring device features of color, and others that are more targeted
maybe
towards
more like how
perception.
Color comes about? So RGB and CMYK, they're related to the process of creating color, right? So how do you mix primary colors and so on? And I think HCL, LAB, HSV, all these, they are more related to what we are interested in color and how we perceive it.
Yeah. And I think in terms of visualization, everything boils down in the end on having, I mean, what we would really like to have in visualization is basically two channels. One that is more for creating different types of colors, what we call categorical colors, and another channel for giving information about quantities and
giving them intensity, sort of.
Yeah, intensity and so on, right? Yeah. This is what we really want in visualization. So maybe we can introduce these two types of main purposes in using color for visualization, for representing categorical data and continuous data. Maybe we can start with categorical data. Gregor, do you want to introduce that?
Yeah, sure. So categorical data is it refers to all the situations where you display information and you want to identify distinct categories in the data. Like you have, for instance, if you have a visualization where you have Republicans, data related to the Republican Party and to the Democratic Party, these are two categories, and you would usually you would use red and blue to represent them. But it gets tricky if you have like five or six categories, and I think it's very hard to display any more categories. So and the tricky point in those color scales is to find the right colors that are both easy to distinguish,
yeah,
and still that are that are not too okay. I have to say that the it's a problem of color is that we also have we have kind of psychology of color, that we connect certain emotions to some colors, and also we have background knowledge, and so it's very difficult.
We have warm and hot, you know, we have hot and cold colors. All these things can play a role in how your final piece is read.
And they perceive differently in different cultures, right?
That also.
That's the next major problem.
Pain in the ass.
So it's difficult to find a perfect combination of colors, categorical data.
Yeah. How many, in your experience, how many different categories can you comfortably express with nice and equally important, let's say, colors?
That's a huge debate, Moritz.
Yeah, I know. I would like to ask the empirical questions, like from your work, what was always the point where it breaks?
No, I'd say it depends, and there's no clear break point.
Give a rough estimation. We want a number, Gregor.
Yeah, you get numbers. but I need to clarify the break point. I think the most crucial break point is where you leave the zone where you can identify values really, really fast. Yeah. And this is probably when you have two or three colors, then it works. But if you come to four or five colors, you would have to read the color in a legend. And so this is very, it is still possible, but it gets slower if every color you introduce.
It also depends on the mark size. So if you have small dots, you have to pick bigger differences between the colors. And the other thing is if you want to express intensities in addition to that. So if you just want to have different categories, I think you can have 10 differentiable colors, basically. But if you want to also express intensities or values, you know, with these colors, with these color hues.
You mean within each category?
Within each category have different values. I think then you cannot have more than four or five, or otherwise you're in trouble. Yeah. That's my experience, at least.
And if you would do something like this, you really need to make sure that you use a color space that has a clear separation between hue and lightness, for instance.
Yes. Yeah.
Because you know, if you take a fully saturated yellow and a fully saturated blue in RGB or HSV, then there is a difference in lightness between both colors, even though they are technically the same brightness. But
In principle, what you really want here when you pick categorical colors, you want them to be some equidistant, right? In a way that you cannot really. It's not only the fact that they have to be sparse, but you also want to make sure that there are no two colors that look more similar than any other two colors, right?
Yeah.
Which is another big challenge.
Yeah.
So if I want to, if I have this problem of selecting categorical colors, what, where do I start from? What do I do? If I am a novice visualization designer and I want to use some categorical colors, what do you suggest? What would be the first step?
I think the first step is really to we need to introduce Color Brewer, which is a very nice I think it's a research project of Cynthia Brewer, and she has developed a set of color scales and also color palettes for categorical data, and you're free to use the colors. And so I think as a novice you should just go to Color Brewer. I think it's colorbrewer2.org, and you select categorical data, and you can select between like 3 or 4 different sets of colors.
Yeah, I fully agree with you, and my take on it is, at least from a research perspective, so some part of my job is reviewing papers, and my rule is whenever I see some color scales that are not explicitly taken from Color Brewer, I almost always expect a justification for that. I mean, it's very hard to justify why not using Color Brewer in my opinion, unless you have very specific reasons for that. Do you agree with me?
Well, I didn't take it that serious in the beginning because the color palettes that come out, they do look a bit, that I know they are right, you know, technically. But sometimes I'm like, they don't look that great, you know.
Yeah, but this
you
is
know what
a
I mean. So that's the tension
kind of
here, exactly.
Problem, right?
So yeah, and the second thing is in my work. I mean, I work with existing brands often. So then you run into this meaning aspect and but it needs to be blue aspect, you know, and. And this is the other thing where you cannot really use Color Brewer. But I think you can, or can you start Color Brewer, like pick or make sure one color appears there for sure, something like that? I'm not sure.
No.
Yeah, that's a problem then. And then you have to sort of wing it or maybe start with a Color Brewer palette, but modify it a bit and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's right. This was also my problem with Color Brewer, that I was forced to use certain brand colors in projects. And so if you want to start to create a color scale or color palette with brand colors, then you get in trouble if you're just using Color Brewer. So what I was interested in is what is the tool that Cynthia Brewer used to develop the colors. So in fact, Color Brewer is not a tool, but it's a collection of fixed colors. Or color palettes, and so that was again the reason why I started to work on Chroma.js. I wanted to have like a tool that gives me an almost perfect color palette between two colors that I can freely define.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
And interestingly, I wrote a blog post about it, and you know, I put this small and interactive demo applet to it, and now people use it for their actual visualization work. Mm-hmm. I think it's even mentioned in the very helpful list of data visualization tools published by. I think data visualization CH in the last 2 weeks. You know, it's just very interesting to me because it's not really a ready to use tool like Color Brewer or something. But
it's a toolkit, right? So you have some helper functions to work with color, right?
Yeah. But I was thinking about going a step further and wrap it up in a kind of simple color palette website where you
that
can.
That would be sweet. Fantastic. Yeah, that would be sweet.
Yeah.
Because there is like Cooler and Color Love and all these. I mean, we should mention that maybe. There are websites where you can exchange colors basically or post colors and stuff like that, which is great fun. I mean, there's a whole, let's say, color industry. But if you had your Color Brewer as a little JavaScript tool, I think that would be amazing because I don't think there is a comparable tool that is perception based, right? So,
right.
Yeah, yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah, sure.
I need to find some time for it.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, please do it. Please do it.
It must be worthwhile.
The first time I saw your tool, I loved it so much because it's a little tool that really covers a gap that we always have. I mean, specifying.
You mean the blog post, the one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe we should explain that.
Yeah. Sure. Sorry. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, do we want to move on talking about using color for continuous data? Because that's also interesting. Gregor, you want to go on that?
Okay. The situations where you use color for continuous data is... first of all, let me start like this. I think it's very difficult to use color for displaying quantitative or continuous data. So there we really have to mention the famous quote of who was it? Moritz, it was you. then
he said famous.
Yeah, I like how he did that.
I like
the
introduction.
Yeah, I like that too.
It is a famous quote, which is...
Moritz, you have famous quotes.
Color is difficult and positions everything. I'm not sure if I get the...
Yeah, that's right. Positions everything, color is difficult. Yeah, that's my six-word advice to people starting out in infobiz.
Yeah,
Enrico, I'm mostly famous for my quotes.
Wow.
There is not much else left.
Should I start saying around that I know you?
Yeah, you can. I mean,
I know Moritz.
Use it wisely. Use it wisely.
I think the first advice for using color for continuous data is
don't
try to figure out another way to show it. At least you can use a combination of color and position, for instance, which is very powerful. Mm-hmm. But if you have like a coral plate map, which is very popular these days, I think it's a poor visualization for comparing quantities in your data set. I think the main advantage of color is to identify certain data points in your data set, but not to compare.
Yeah.
But because you can say like this this color is twice as much as the other color, so it's a big problem if you display it. You get an overall picture, but you're very limited in reading it.
Yeah, sure.
But then there's we should mention that there are two major types of continuous color scales, which is we have a diverging color scales, and we have like a sequential color scale. And the main difference is that one ranges from one color to another color, and the other has like three colors, so you can use it for bipolar data. If you have like wins and losses in a financial data set, you can go to red and some other color for the wins. Maybe not green, because mixing red and green is very attractive to do so, because at least in our culture, red and green are very clearly defined colors. So we have like red for bad and green for good. I say in our culture, but the big problem of red and green scales is we have. A certain amount of colorblind people, and they have big problems in reading red green color scales.
Yeah. Once again, sorry if I interrupt you. I think this reminded me that once again, it's really hard to have hard guidelines in visualization, because I was thinking that in biology they have these heat maps that go from black to green and from black to red. And this is a sort of standard for them. And if you try to change that, they would complain. And they don't want to see anything different, because they are so much ingrained into this kind of representation that if you would change it, I'm not sure you would gain anything anything in terms of, I don't know if it would be more an advantage in having a more precise color scale, but trying to break the rules or the other way around. Yeah, just to tell you something that came into my mind.
Yeah, but it's true. And also the rainbow scale, it is so established already that it's really hard to get rid of, you know, be it as bad
but
as
I think with the rainbow color scale, it's trickier, right? I mean, going from black to red to green is still fine, but using a rainbow color scale to represent continuous data is just plain wrong, right? I don't know if you agree with me, but I think it's just plain wrong.
Yeah, there's at least some problems with it. But, I mean, we could play this through as an example. Let's say you have a map, world map of global warming, you know, and you have like a range of temperatures you want to express. I mean, how would you do it?
I think, yeah, I don't know if we want to go much deeper into that, but since you opened that...
that can of worms.
The can of worms, the Pandora's box. I do believe there are a few cases where you have these cases where you have continuous data, but you are interested in segmenting different areas of this continuous field, right?
Probably that's right. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, mm-hmm.
That's much trickier than the usual cases. And in that case, you want something that is continuous, but at the same time creates distinct, very distinct labels.
Mm.
But I'm not sure this happens very often in standard visualizations or problems people have with visualization. I wouldn't start from this problem, right?
Mm. But you're right. The first thing is we have to accept you cannot express continuous data accurately in color because there's no good notion of what is twice as red, or there's no good number to be put on, you know, a certain difference between blue and green. I think that's the first thing we have to accept. There is no good representation of continuous data with colors. And then you're right, probably the best way around is to try and make it ordinal data, or, you know, chop it into like five different classes of things and then work with that and take it from there. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's even trickier than that. I mean, there is a very nice old paper from Haim Lefkowitz, which is called Color Scales for Image Data. Mm-hmm. I think this has been published in 1992. And what surprised me of this paper is that this is very basic user studies on color scales. And they use in this user study grayscale color scales, right? Which is the most basic kind of things you would use. And you would say that is quite accurate, right?
Yeah.
Because
grayscale
should be fine, and luminance is increasing in a linear fashion there, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But even there, the way we perceive a linear increase in grayscale is not perceived linearly.
Yeah,
that's right.
And you have context effect. So if you have something bright surrounded by something not so bright, it looks less bright, you know, than when it's surrounded by bright things.
Yeah, and
so
then
on.
You have all the contextual
it looks
factors
brighter. Yeah,
which
yeah.
play
and
a role
that's,
there. Yeah.
That comes on top of that. So, oh man, color is difficult, man.
Don't use color.
Yeah, don't do it. Just use it for decoration. That's my tip, probably. Decorate with color, use the rest like properly.
Well, we could say, yeah. Color is like a cherry, is the last thing you want to put on top, right?
Yeah, what do you say? Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, there's in design, there's this saying, get it right in black and white, you know, like first make it right with all the hard edges and the positioning and just the spatial layout, and then add sort of the color, but texture and these weaker attributes. I mean,
At the same time, this reminds me a very nice chapter in one of the Don Norman's book. I don't remember anymore which one.
Mm-hmm.
And, He describes the first time when color screens came into the market,
mm-hmm.
and he was very skeptical about it because, of course, he coming from the science of interaction design, he was fully convinced that color just doesn't play any substantial role, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then I don't know if you read that, and then he describes his experience with the first color monitor, and just pretending that it's not true, that it's much better.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And I found it really intriguing. I mean, that what science tells you is not exactly what you feel like. I think this is really, really interesting.
The emotional aspect is so strong.
Yeah, the emotional aspect.
And that makes it so challenging too. Yeah, I think that's both, yeah. Yeah, but I think there are some good rules. So I think, I mean, Gregor and I, we had this nice discussion with the Guardian, with the interactive. No, it wasn't the, it was the data.
How data blog.
The data blog, exactly. And they put up a map where, I don't know, Gregor and I, we were a bit bored probably. And we were just seeing that map and said like, oh, come on, what type of color scheme is that, please? And so we started to rant a bit on Twitter. But in the end, it actually led to a quite nice improvement of the whole map. So I think that was a nice episode. And I think that also makes clear, although it's difficult, there are some things you can still improve with simple rules, right? Mm-hmm. Or with simple, let's say, common sense or experience. Sure.
Yeah. Gregor, you want to say something more on continuous color scales?
I think we covered the most important issues already. I just wanted to add this nice situation where I found myself standing in front of a room full of scientists, and I took the chance to ask them why they use the rainbow color scale, because I agree with you that it's a poor color scale, but it's on this day I saw like 20 presentations from scientists, and it was like 15 of them used rainbow color scales, and it was very interesting to hear like the answers, what is the actual reason, and most interestingly is that the rainbow scales are a default color scale in some of the tools that they use. Yeah. And second is, as you mentioned, they use the color scale, the rainbow color scale, for quite a long time, and they became experts in reading the color scale. So they internalized the non-existent order of views, which I say non-existent. There's kind of wavelength-based order of views, but it's not ordinary people are not familiar with it. So, and the third reason was the most interesting one, and which is like, we know that the color scale looks pretty ugly, but if we would spend more time on making our visualization more pretty, we might get in trouble in arguing that our research is scientific, and it's because if it looks ugly, they said, then people would say, okay, there must have good findings in there.
There must be some inner beauty.
Yeah.
I've never heard this comment before. It's fantastic.
I did quite often. I know.
Did you?
Yeah, of course. If we dress up our charts, it makes us look as if we have something to hide. You know, that's the logic behind it. Yeah. And if we have ugly charts as everybody else, our research, and you know, and they still get published, our research must be good. Right.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean,
yeah, that's the way it is in science. Yeah. I'm sorry.
During the last episode, we discussed these images from Barabasi. He's a physicist. He's very well known, and he's been producing fantastic graphics. So I don't know if this is more of a.
Yeah, but we're talking about the average case, right? I mean, there are some brilliant people. And also, I see the US universities like Stanford and so on. They pick up on the good stuff, definitely. But let's say your average scientists working in a lab, they do make some funky graphs, I can tell you.
Yeah, I saw a good quantity of them myself.
Yeah.
I just want to mention again about on the research side regarding the rainbow color scales. There was a fantastic paper last year at InfoVis titled Evaluation of Artery Visualizations for Heart Disease Diagnosis.
It was best paper, I think.
Wanted to have this one best paper, and it wasn't even mentioned among those that had an honorable mention. This was a shock for me.
Yeah.
And the presentation, by the way, was fantastic as well. But okay. Mm-hmm. Anyway, tricks of our academic community. Yeah. I don't know what happened there. Anyway, this paper is fantastic because what they do, so I hope I remind... I Yeah, I think I remember right well how it was. Yes. So basically they had a visualization from a standard visualization of a heart used by doctors for diagnosis, which uses... So the standard visualization was a 3D representation of the heart or parts of the heart, I don't remember, and colored according to using a color scale, a rainbow color scale. And then they created other versions by using either a 2D representation of the art and or a different, more balanced color scale, okay? And then they tested these four combinations. So color scale, the four combinations you can get by mixing 2D, 3D, and rainbow color scale and the other color scale. And then they tested this with medical doctors who had to come up with the diagnosis on real cases. Mm-hmm. And actually, they counted the percentage of errors they made with these combinations. So it's quite serious.
So they had actual, exactly, like serious cases. And
serious cases, serious okay? Cases, yeah. So mm-hmm. they had to diagnose, I don't remember exactly what, but it was something like whether they are going to have an heart attack or not. Mm-hmm. Okay, something mm-hmm. like that, along these lines. I don't remember, I might be wrong, but it's something along these lines. And the combination, so first of all, they demonstrated that 2D in this case is better than 3D, and rainbow color scale and the other color scale is much better than the rainbow color scales. Mm. But what was shocking is that the two things together had an improvement of something like 90-something%, okay? Mm-hmm. Which was shocking. It's one of the best numbers I've ever seen in any evaluation study in visualization. So I think it's a great example for everyone to argue against a rainbow color scale and using 2D versus 3D. This was particularly surprising because what people normally say is that 3D is appropriate when the original object has mm-hmm. a special extension, mm-hmm. right? But that was not the case in this case. So mm-hmm. I don't know how generalizable this example is, but it's definitely one of the clearest cases, scientific cases against the rainbow color scale I've ever seen.
That's something, yeah. Good.
Okay, so unless you have more to say, I had a couple of questions that I wanted to ask you guys that come from my experience, problems I always have with colors, and I want to see if you have any solutions. One problem I always have with continuous color scales is that very, very often the distribution of the data is very skewed. So what you get is basically one element with one color mm. and all the rest with the same color, right? So basically on the screen you have two colors, mm-hmm. one element with one color and all the others with the same color at the bottom of the color scale. Mm. Do you ever... I'm sure you experienced that in the past. What do you do?
I think there are... If you have two colors and you interpolate a continuous color scale between them, or even if you have distinct colors like 10 colors, then you have different ways in computing those colors. One is to use equidistant colors in the color space, which results to a kind of linear gradient. But this one often turns out to be very poor if you have those skewed distributions you mentioned, because you have one just basically everything in the same color. There are two other ways to compute the gradients, and one is to use quantile scales, where you put the data so you analyze the data first and you choose the colors in a way that every color is equally used in the map, which is this is kind of the way the quanta scales. And there's also you can also use clustering techniques to identify clusters in your data first, and then you assign equidistant colors to those clusters. And
that's interesting. Yeah,
but there's no. If you do so, you kind of distort the view on the data.
Exactly, and it's hard to explain sometimes what's going on.
Yeah. And what you see most in most tools is that you allow users to change the modes of the continuous color scales.
The simple tip I have maybe is, I mean, again, we are running into this quantitative information with color, and I mean, A, try to avoid it, but B, if you do it, I think what often works quite well is try to work more in a sense of what is an average value or the median value and what is like significantly above that or below that, and try to encode that in color. And that might also help with skewed distributions, because often you have, let's say, you have a bell curve around a normal value or an expected value, and then you have some outliers, right?
Yeah, sure.
And so if you put your average color, which might be gray, for instance, in the center, at the center of that distribution, and then use two colors that are strongly different, like, let's say, purple and green, going into the two directions, then you might get around that issue and highlight effectively what is like an average value and what is a more extreme or not so normal value.
Yeah, I think that's what a diverging quantile scale is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and often I think that helps in sort of highlighting now what is the interesting small data and the big data.
So I think in general, the more you know about the data and the more of this knowledge you put into the color scale, the more useful
Excellent point. Yeah.
So if you're, for instance, like in those medical visualizations, you're probably interested in a specific range in, like, say, blood pressure, then you can use like low bright and less saturated colors for the rest, and
lots of red, for instance,
and put just one significant color for the range that you are interested in, and this gives very powerful color scales. Even more if you allow the user to change the focus of the color scale, then it gets increasingly powerful, because then you use the color scale for identifying certain aspects in your data and not to compare quantities so much.
Mm-hmm. So normally, just blindly mapping a continuous dimension to a continuous color scale normally doesn't work, right? I mean, in my experience, almost always you need some kind of tricks and tweaking there. There are a few cases where it just works away the first time you use it, the first color scale you use. I think this is a general advice that I would give for visualization, not even only for color, that always try out many, many alternatives. Even if you are slightly satisfied with what you currently have, trying out different things and confirm that what you have is still better than the rest, I think it's a critical skill. Do you agree, guys?
Yeah, totally.
Sure.
Okay, another question I have is, sometimes in my experience it happens that I think it's a good idea to double encode the same variable with color and another visual feature like length or size. Do you ever do that? And do you think there is a good practice? What are the advantages and disadvantages of doing that?
I would say yes, do it. It's no problem to use to encode your information in a redundant way. I think this slightly touches the thing Moritz talked about, that you can use it for decoration or at least for making it easy to read it. Underlining the meaning or the context of the data, you can underline it with a certain kind of color, and yeah, so it's a good thing to.
I mean, it could be interesting. I mean, because you would think there's some interaction. So if I make something more colorful and more larger, at the same time? I mean, mm-hmm. it's interesting how these two interact. Enrico, do you know something about that? Do you, can you multiply yeah. these two? Can
this
you
is
add
something
them
I,
up?
I was is, going to know, mention. How does it as work? Far I mean, as I know, there are no studies in... Uh-huh. I mean, this is a clear gap in visualization research. Yeah. As far as I know, there are no studies checking on what's the interaction between yeah. Between compound visual features. Yeah. So it's not only about, it's not only when you use color and size, it could be color and something else, or even just other features, right? Mm-hmm. There, as far as I know, there are no serious studies about this issue.
Interesting.
I mean, there is the old theory of separable and integral dimensions, mm-hmm. which, but I think this comes more from the core vision science kind of studies. Mm-hmm. But I've never seen anything.
And it doesn't
applied.
Tell you exactly how they interact.
It doesn't tell you exactly yeah. how to combine different yeah. features and what's yeah. the interaction among them. We do know that there is an interaction. Mm-hmm. The theory of separable and integral dimensions tells us that there is. There might be a strong interaction, but there's exactly. I don't yeah. know. I'm not aware of any studies
because you know bubble charts. They are criticized that we underestimate the larger values, right? Because area is perceived not linearly, but a larger area is perceived a bit smaller than it should be.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you could give it more punch color wise to compensate that, and then you end up again with a linear perception if you do it right. Possibly.
Yeah, who
I mean,
knows?
Maybe,
yeah.
maybe
think,
you know,
I think
perception
that's an
hacks,
interesting question.
More or less,
yeah.
could work. I
mean, could work. Yeah.
Yeah. But the other thing, the other alternative you have. Okay, you have two alternatives. One is to use no color at all and just use like size or position, and the other is to use color to encode a second dimension. And this is something. I would always use position for the more important data dimension, and maybe use color for some interesting side effects of mm-hmm. your data.
Yeah, and it does work great for categories. I mean, we shouldn't forget that. So all these election maps, like Democrats yeah. versus Republicans, or if you have four different types of muesli ingredients, I don't know. Yeah, yeah. No, then color is really effective. I mean, we shouldn't forget that.
Right.
For just establishing groups in the data, it's fine. It's more about this more about, yeah. where you try too much with data where it breaks, with too much with color where it breaks. Yeah.
Okay, I think we could almost wrap up.
Yeah, we scratched the surface.
Yeah, I think we scratched the surface.
But it's an hour already. Yeah.
Before concluding, I just wanted to ask you guys if I'm learning data visualization and I'm a novice, and I want to get something like the three most important tips about color. What would you tell to a person who is trying to learn how to use color in visualization? What do you think are the most important tips? Could be 3, 4, or 5. I mean, just a number of tips that can be counted in one hand.
I mean, my simple tips would be use it mostly for grouping, mm-hmm. you know, for categories of things. If you use it for numbers, probably it's a good idea to think about how the data is centered around the average and then use one color for going below the average and one above, or chop your data into 5 different groups, yeah, mm-hmm. based mm-hmm. on the value you want to encode. Use Color Brewer and ask a few people for feedback and have people actually read out the values, you know, they read to you, because color is so subjective that you on your computer screen might believe one thing, but everybody else might believe a different thing. So,
yeah, sure.
So this is
sure.
really also a case where you need to check on different devices and also check with different people. I think that's a good
yeah.
topic probably too.
Yeah. And yeah. Sorry, Gregor, before I ask to you, I don't want to forget that. I don't know if it's not exactly the right moment to tell that, but we didn't mention that and it came to my mind. please don't forget to put a legend in your visualization. I mean, this is so much important with
might
color.
Be, be
we didn't mention yeah. that, but I think it's so important that we have to mention it. Yeah. Put a legend somewhere. Every time you use color, please put a legend. I mean, there are so many visualizations around without a legend, and it's a pain in the ass again. I mean, it's sorry, I wanted to say, I wanted to make sure we had that in the episode.
We have Gregor, the basics, yeah. Yeah,
that's the basic. Gregor, go ahead with your tips.
Beside of that, the tips we already mentioned, like don't use color in the first place if you want to show quantitative or continuous data. I would add that the fewer colors you have, you use, the more effectful they will they are. Mm-hmm. Like it's always a good idea to try out like two colors or even one color. If you have a very gray for most, and then you identify one group of your data set in like a red, then it's very effectful. It's and you can't beat that with like, or you can't do this with like four or five colors. The next tip I want to give is there is a small tool called Color Oracle, which is the most convenient thing you can use to check your visualization for colorblind people. Color Oracle, and in contrast to many people know the website, I don't know address it, where you can upload images and it will convert it to colorblind simulated version. And Color Oracle does the same thing, but in real time. I just press one key on my keyboard and I see my computer screen as if I was colorblind. Mm-hmm. And it's a free tool. It's for all systems. And just download colororacle.org, I think. I think the last tip that I... or the last rule that I would like to add is it's stolen from Edward Tufte, and he says, above all, do no harm.
I agree. That's definitely the best,
advice. And it's very easy to do harm with color.
It's true. Yeah, it can really hurt badly. It's true. Don't hurt anyone with color. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe I love this one. Yeah, I have three basic rules. Maybe I can mention that. And the first one is don't overestimate color. I mean, I think one of the most important thing about colors, learn how limited it is. I think that's the first thing you have to learn. It is very limited. And my second tip is don't underestimate color, because at the same time, I mean, there are cases where when color is used properly, it's just magic. It just works. Mm. It's perfect. It's just really, really hard to find this sweet spot where color is exactly the right balanced in a way that communicate information that couldn't be communicated more effectively in other ways. And I think that's really, really hard. And the last one is pretty basic. In doubt, use Color Brewer. I mean, I think, especially if you are a novice, I don't see a reason.
Start with that. And then you can still see, like, if you can come up with a modified version of the color scale that fits even better, or, you know, but you have that then as a reference from the readability point of view, that this is the gold standard, sort of. And you shouldn't be much worse than that, of course.
Yeah, exactly. And if somebody argues against the way you choose your color, you can blame somebody else, right? It's also a way to
shield
yourself.
That's the way to success.
it's strategic in this way, in a way. Okay, guys, I don't know. Do you want to add anything about color? I think we covered pretty much.
Yeah, at least I think we have enough pointers so people can get started to dig into the topic. And it is a whole world of its own. And I mean, I think we all do data visualization now for years and we all feel like novices, probably. I mean, I do at least when it comes to color, because it's so complex. Yeah.
Sure. Gregor, I just want to say thanks a lot. It's been fantastic to have you here in this episode. I also want to mention that, of course, since we've been talking about color, we didn't have time to talk about all your projects, which I really, really like. And I'm looking forward to seeing more from your side. And I don't know, maybe in the future we can organize another episode where we discuss more about your projects. I would love to do that. And yeah, that's all for today.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, it was great having you. Fantastic. Good stuff.
Okay. Bye-bye, guys.
Yeah. Bye. Talk soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.